Yoga in all its forms has been a support for me in my life, through all the highs and lows. It's opened my mind and my heart in ways I never knew were possible. It has been a teacher, a taskmaster, and a friend. This podcast is an offering. I wish to share the teachings of yoga with you as a tool to help navigate life. Namaste, and welcome. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. So in the last episode, you may recall, we talked about kleshas. I introduced you to the Sanskrit concept of kleshas, defined as afflictions, hindrances, sometimes addictions. And we discussed the first klesha, which is at the root of all the rest, which is avidya, simply defined as ignorance or a lack of knowing, being in the dark about something. And you may want to go back and listen to the previous episode to get an overview and to get an understanding of avidya before listening to this episode. Because in this episode, we're going to go into the second klesha, which is asmita. And asmita is defined usually as ego, but also as pride and I am-ness. Now, this thing about ego, you know, we talk about the ego and we say, oh, you know, that's your ego. Your ego's making you do that. And people can kind of get a little ruffled by a lack of understanding of what we really mean by ego in this context, because sometimes people think that we're calling them, well, I was going to say sometimes they think we're calling them big-headed, and we kind of are, but To have a very strong sense of self and to be egotistical or really egoic, that is a pretty firm self-identification, and that is the klesha. So in other words, we want to recognize that the ego does have some really great, valuable aspects to it. So we don't want to eviscerate the ego. The ego is in part this faculty that allows you to understand clearly that you are separate to a degree from certain things. So a simple example is, I don't want to abolish my ego or totally eviscerate my ego and then step in front of a train because I think I'm one with the train. I don't have any sense of myself, and I don't have any sense of how to keep myself alive, you know, what good would that be, right? So we don't want to be completely without an ego because then we would not survive. We would get hit by trucks. And if we don't survive, if we don't allow our natural survival skills to play every once in a while, then we cannot realize our full potential and our purpose in this human incarnation, which is to love and serve and to show up in the way that our life presents our potential. So in other words, your life is already revealing to you the ways in which you are most purposeful in love and service simply by the gifts that you already have. This ego that we talk about, Wayne Dyer was always, I guess we would call him a spiritual teacher. He would use the acronym, ego is when you edge God out. So when I hear that, I think when I become so full of myself that I'm not in this place of miracle, divinely created brilliance, I'm kind of acting bigger than anything around me. Okay, so why do people have that inflated ego? Well, we become very attached to our sense of self because we're ignorant. Remember Avidya from the last episode, we're ignorant to our true nature. And so there's this activation of, well, I need to have my license right in front of me, you know, my driver's license or my passport. So, well, that's me. That's exactly who I am. For me, labels and identifications would sound something like, I identify as a Caucasian female in her late 50s, short, married, a mother, a daughter, a dog lover, a yoga teacher. These are labels that if you just think of like little post-it notes with the sticky back on them, they're just labels that I stuck all over myself. It's the way I identify myself. But what we really want to get to the degree of is to understand that those are just costumes that we wear or masks that we wear in this physical form that we've manifested in. We're so much more than these identifications. We're ignorant to our brilliance. And the thing about the ego, when it really hangs and grips on these identification tags, on these labels, is that now what you do in your relationships and the way you show up in life is you will defend your title, right? You will defend how you see yourself. So there was a very wise yoga teacher many, many years ago, and his name escapes me. But I remember, if I thought about it, I'd probably come up with it, but let's not guess. And he said, it's a complete sentence, I am. And there's no period at the end of it. And I am absolutely paraphrasing what he said. But the message he was trying to give us is, I am is a complete sentence. If you've ever read Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul, which if you listen to this podcast, I reference a lot, even if just by title, he has this whole section in the beginning about, it's probably about the inner roommate, I think might be one of the chapter titles, but it's about how somebody asks you, who are you? You start giving them like your name, your social security number, your address, where you were born, when you went to school, who you're married to, who your best friends are, what foods you like, you know, but those are all these really misconceptions because you are seeing yourself as this limited being, and you're seeing yourself and identifying yourself as a self with a small s. But the truth of the matter is your nature is that you are a self with a big S. And you want to not be rigid about your self-identification. Because then that limits you. So if I say, I'm a yoga teacher, okay, that might be a fact of who I am or a part of who I identify with, but I want to keep myself open and capable of expansion. So I don't want to get attached to the identificational role as a yoga teacher. Now, one of the big trip-ups with ego, with Asmita and Avidya, again, which is at the root of all the other kleshas, is this regarding the impermanent as permanent. When you regard the impermanent as permanent, what you're doing is you are denying the fact of nature that everything is change. Nothing stays the same. I'm not going to tell you this concept is easy for me. I have a hard time with it. My beautiful, beloved dog, Bodhi, suddenly passed away 2 months ago, and I'm not okay with that change. And yet I know that beings are born and beings die. Their essence is forever. Their soul is forever. But we all have a limited time here in this incarnation that we identify with right now. So there's an idea of change. I am going to tell you honestly, when I look at my beloved pets, I don't really believe there ever going to be a box of cremated ashes on a shelf in my home. And so when it happens, I'm stricken. It's tragedy. It's crisis. But if we could remind ourselves through things like nature, Mother Nature, and the weather and times of day and all those things, that the truth is all things are changing, we will be less attached to our own self-identification. So here's another example. I was the founder of a yoga studio in my hometown of Massapequa in New York for about 15 years. And I knew through my study that all things are impermanent. And yet, when the studio was forced to close due to COVID, I had a hard time with it. I didn't have a hard time with it initially, but as time went on, it started to feel like that role that I identified with was starting to become slowly invisible. So that person that I confidently walked around identifying as a yoga studio founder in my hometown, you know, whatever that meant, it's intellectually, I knew it would never last forever. But the identification of being in that role, that was challenging to feel the impermanence of that. So when we have relationships change, when we have careers change, when we greet new people into our families or new pets into our families, and then when those people leave, when we lose those people, all of this is the nature of change. The suffering comes when we regard the impermanent as permanent. We're tricking ourselves. That's ignorant. Things are going to be ever changing. So we do not want to stay ignorant to the fact that the way we identify ourselves is a fixed thing, because it's not. So I'm 59 years old. I'm not 39 years old. So short of removing all the mirrors from my home, I get to see change all the time. If I stay attached to the identification of how I looked when I was younger, someone sent me over the holiday a screenshot of, they must have been looking at old home videos, and it was a picture of me at a party of theirs. And I think I was something like 35 years old. Wow. I looked young. I had, you know, soft, smooth skin and luscious hair and whatever the heck you have at 35, hopefully. I didn't want to look at that picture and mourn my youth. I wanted to say hello to her and say, look how far we've come, and look at how we've evolved, and look at all the changes we've gone through, the highs and the lows, the pleasures and the pains. And good thing we don't get attached to anything too much. You know, another identification is of mother, right? I'm a mother of three amazing adult children. And if I stayed attached to being the mother of young children, I would be treating my adult children as if they were young. And you see parents, mothers do that a lot. They don't trust that they have instilled a certain code and a certain sense of judgments into their children when they were on the job 24/7, that they now can release them into the adult world and know that they will thrive, or at least they will evolve through whatever life throws their way. You follow? So if I hovered over my adult children and tried to tell them how to do things and correct them and call them out on things, and it would be just so incredibly suffocating. And what I would be doing is I would be locking myself in some false identification of the permanent role of mother, of people that could not go out in the world and adult or individuate. So I would create suffering for myself, and I would create suffering in the relationship I would have with my children, because I want to stay permanently stuck to the role of their mother. And so I want to tell them how to do their thing. And I want them to need me in a way that would not be healthy. So we must be able to move through these shifting roles. You know, people retire from their jobs because nothing is permanent. Everything is ever changing. I like to say when people retire from a long career that it's actually they have the courage to reimagine a new life for themselves, no matter what their age, because your vocation is your career and maybe it's your passion, but your potential and your purpose, it never ends. There's no retirement for your potential and your purpose. Why? Because your potential and your purpose is to love and to serve, to be love and to be in service. So that is a forever thing. That change occurs when the physical body is no longer, but your soul and your essence continues. That is my understanding. So ego, asmita, pride, rigid self-identification. If you are not comfortable with changes that you're seeing in your body, changes that you are seeing on your face, changes that you are seeing in the roles that you had, you will suffer. You will be ill at ease with yourself and your life. You will be discontent. And you will be practicing avidya, which we don't want to practice, which is the ignorance that says everything is going to stay exactly the way it is, right? Also the ignorance that forgets that you are love, that you are all love. And remembering that love on the inside that is your core truth, the outside can do whatever it wants. I'm going to take care of this vessel. It's going to change no matter what. I can't cheat death. I probably can't dip and dodge from illness, but I am going to take the best care of my body that I can and know that all I am doing is creating a healthy temple to the best of my ability, no perfection, no mastery, but creating a healthy temple of which to project my best self, which is love and service. No perfection, no mastery. Practice, mindfulness, awareness. And again, these investigative practices like, hey, what are the kleshas? Well, they're afflictions. How do they afflict me? How do they affect me? How do they obscure the truth for me? And we unpack these things and we see how they manifest in our lives. It's all a practice, and that's really important to remember. We also want to think of this ego. I like to just play with this a little bit when you say, like, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm joyful. When we see these sentences like, I am angry, you are owning that anger and seeing it as a self-identification. Better to say, I have anger, so that we realize that these emotions are impermanent as well. The flow of energy is that if you recognize that you have anger, anger will pass through you and not become some kind of a stuck self-identification, which is what we want to be mindful of. Maya Angelou's quote, every storm runs out of rain, is what I think of there. So thank you for listening. That's the ego. We've talked about ignorance, and now we've talked about the ego. And we're going to see how the ego can kind of play out in the next episode when we talk about raga and dvesha, which is attachments to pleasure and our relationship to things that we are aversions. Hands at the heart center. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings live with ease. Namaste.